All right, Max, welcome back.
All right.
We weren't quite
weekend
here.
Weekend show.
we weren't here last week.
No, I was in California hanging out with my girlfriend, shout out to Ariel Bailey, in the Bay of California.
And how was the weather in the Bay of California?
It was cold. It's very weird. It was like 58 degrees.
And it's chilly.
Gray, yeah.
And so would you go fishing and take the boat out in the rain and get a canoe?
No, we didn't do that. We just went to the park in San Francisco, Golden Gate Park, which is a beautiful place.
Yeah.
It's huge. You walk the trails. You end up right at the Pacific Ocean.
I don't think I've been there. I think the last time I saw that in the news was Magneto was actually taking the bridge and moving it over to the prison.
Yeah, I forgot that was in the news. Yeah, that real event happened. Yeah, that was awesome when he did that.
Yeah.
Magneto's so misunderstood.
Well, you know, that'll happen.
We need to redeem him.
And And so what else? So you're back, and you're back. You started teaching again, and
I'm back. Yes, I'm not going to disclose where I'm teaching just for privacy reasons. But if you know who I am, for you. All right.
Good.
I'm glad
good.
I can bless your life with my crazy antics, I guess.
Well, today is I don't even know the date. It's September 9th. September 9th, 2018, and we've had a heck of a week. We're going to talk about it political wise. And Max, what I'm just ultra excited about is right now, you know, these are waves. As the Senate races go through, they're all waves. And right now, the Democrats are poised, without Texas, without winning Texas, to pick up the seats needed for the majority, 51-49, without Texas. That's with Ted Cruz winning. It actually boils down to how Florida is going to go, and Florida's got a trouble spot. They have I didn't care for him as a governor, but the governor out there is a popular guy. The incumbent senator is the Democrat. He's popular. He's not a campaigner at all. But because of the governor, the Democrat governor hopeful, he's got a lot of support, and so I'm hoping that he brings people out to break the dead tie, and we'll see who wins that. But I'm excited about for the first time in a long time, I'm excited about the Senate race. We've got to do something about this man in the White House.
Yeah, we do. Well, I'm glad that you mentioned Texas. I would love to start off with a brief conversation about the Senate race happening right in our backyard.
With Ted and Beto?
Ted and Beto.
Raphael and Robert?
Raphael and Robert, yeah. One took a... lots of interesting name choices for those two. You know, I have a really interesting article from GQ magazine that I would love to read some excerpts from. This article is written by Christopher Hooks, came out in August 22nd. It'll be in the September edition of GQ magazine. GQ magazine's been doing some pretty cool stuff. Have you heard about the eventual extinction of the human race?
No, but I kind of live it. I do, the art, life imitating art. What was that movie about? The birth rate was
children
zero.
Children
of men.
Yeah.
And I live it every day. I think that we're getting hotter, and I think that people are becoming sterile. And by choice, people don't want to have babies.
Yes, I think that's true. But GQ magazine had this amazing article about how the plastics that we're drinking is lowering the sperm count. The sperm count of preceding generations. And eventually it's going to be such that there will be no sperm left and we won't be able to continue the human race, which I think as a way to go as a species is not that bad. So yeah. Anyway, I thought, well, yeah, I think it's much better than being boiled by the sea.
In a way, that kind of highlights what's going on with this podcast is that we're talking about two different generations' viewpoints on things, and not necessarily the death of man, but a lot of the Baby boomers, and especially the older baby boomers, are those going into retirement and older, they don't care what happens in 20 years.
Yeah.
And so they want to kind of ride the nest, ride the wave, as rich and as safe as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the 60-year-olds and 50-year-olds are going to have to own up to some change. But right now, that crest is not to, you know, they could care less if the sperm count is dying, or they could care less if the plastic sludge ball in the ocean is existing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's what they can get, and make sure their golf game's fine in Scotland, and that's it.
Yeah, that's baby boomer mindset, that's for sure. But enough about the inevitable decline of sperm.
Well, I'm just glad that you picked GQ magazine as the.
GQ. I might replace my New Yorker subscription with a GQ subscription, because they've been putting out some pretty good work.
But GQ is like $12 a year.
Really, it's that cheap?
It's ultra cheap. It always has been. It's one of the few magazines I was able to afford back in the back when I actually read.
Wow.
When I cared about what I looked like and wore.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay. Well, maybe I will make the plunge and bump up my style and also read some pretty interesting articles from now on. Anyway, this article, it's titled Beto O'Rourke versus Ted Cruz and the Fight for America. And I just want to read, like, the first two paragraphs, okay?
Okay.
Ted Cruz is misunderstood, Ted Cruz tells me. Out behind Mama Jack's Roadhouse Cafe, the most prominent eatery in Koontz, Texas, the senator is hunkered down in the passenger seat of a Texas-sized pickup truck, watching through Ray-Bans as his staffers rearrange vehicles in his traveling caravan. It's the last stop on a 5-day campaign tour, Cruz's tepid counterpoint to the marathon barnstorming that his Democratic opponent, Beto O'Rourke, has become famous for. I like that just intro of Ted Cruz being misunderstood, and it's Ted Cruz saying that. And here's the truth that Ted Cruz wants to let out. The truth, Cruz wants me to know, is that he's always been a more lighthearted fellow than he's been given credit for being. I like to have fun. I enjoy life. I like to make jokes, Ted Cruz tells me.
He's like he's told to say that.
In 2013...
Become more likable, Ted.
In 2013, that was 5 years ago. In 2013, during the Obamacare filibuster, I read Green Eggs and Ham on the Senate floor. I did a Darth Vader impression. I turned to Mike Lee and I said, Mike, I am your father. During the presidential campaign, I did Simpsons impressions and reenacted scenes from The Princess Bride. Politics these days has gotten so serious, he complains. First of all, Ted Cruz, everybody, hilarious. His most recent jokes were made 5 years ago in 2013. He wants you to know that he is actually a human and not just some blob slabby, like, gelatin creature from the sea.
Okay, well, you know, I think Ted Cruz has been doing the right things. Number one, I'm still believing that he's going to win the Senate seat, unfortunately.
Okay.
But I think, there's two things I want to bring up. Is number one, he has done everything right. Number one, he has hidden himself away from the population.
Yeah.
He's lost weight. He played Jimmy Kimmel in basketball and beat him. You know,
did you see him play basketball?
No.
My boy's, he's got no moves, man.
And you know, the point, and Jimmy Kimmel's probably out of shape as well, but the point is that he did it and he attacked it and he did fine. And
he's having fun.
Well, I don't know how fun he's having, but he's pomp and circumstance and he's out there to win. And he's going to, unless, you know, we can energize and Beto's energizing. Unless we continue.
Oh, yeah.
He was on Ellen the other day. Did you see him on Ellen?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's running, and he's doing great. Now, my question...
My man is fit.
My next question is, how Texan is Ted Cruz? Where is he from? I know he was born in Canada.
Yeah.
And he went to Harvard Law, and he taught at UT Law. Yeah. You know, he's very intelligent,
mm-hmm.
but it's just the politics that drive me crazy.
Yeah.
Where is he from in Texas? Did he grow up in San Antonio?
Let's look it up. I think he's from Houston.
Houston. So and what high school did he go to? Where did he go to high school? Where did he hang out?
Origin. Well, he was probably hanging out in like some closet or something. Yeah,
I'm sure he
was probably hanging out in a locker that he got stuffed in my boy, Nerdy. Let's see. That's his current residence is Houston. Ted Cruz High School. He went. Ew. The first thing that pops up when I look up Ted Cruz High School is Ted Cruz in high school, a prodigy who with plans for world domination.
Sounds by Ted Cruz, written by Ted Cruz.
Yeah, yeah, that is, whew, tells you a lot about this guy.
So my question is, where is he? Because I never hear stories other than his roommate, his roommate's Twitter feed when he was running for senator the first time.
Yeah, tell us more about that.
Well, I don't remember much, but his roommate would tweet out different remembrances of living with him for half a semester or half a year that he lived with him, and such as Ted had a greasy film to him they called the ooze, the Cruz ooze, and he would just leave it everywhere, they would
Cruz,
and so it was fun. I think Ted really enjoyed those tweets because he's a good-hearted, looking for fun kind of guy.
Yeah, so he went to Second Baptist High School in Texas. I don't know where that is.
Second Baptist?
Second Baptist. First Baptist.
There's no Second Baptist.
Apparently there is, because there's a school.
What the
Second
heck?
Baptist High School.
That used to be, are you sure you're looking up real internet stuff? Anyway.
It was in Houston. Okay. It's in Houston. It's a private Christian school.
And why settle for first when you can have second? Because two is bigger than one.
Yeah, maybe I can talk to my my department head. Shout out to Brittany Barham. She can tell me more about what it means to be a First and Second Baptist. Okay, I'd like to learn more about that. But yeah, no, Ted Cruz, real Texan or real blobfish? I don't know. We'll find out.
I think carpetbagger is the term that they're throwing out there for Ted.
For Teddy?
Yeah.
You've got him compared to Beto, who, oh my God, 5% body fat, Adonis body.
All right. Well, you know,
skateboards in Whataburger parking lots.
Which I think is great because Ted made fun of his sign saying they look like the spicy ketchups.
Oh, yeah. Whatever. Spicy ketchups. Right. My voting base thinks it's too damn spicy.
All right. And so, you know, he's got a point. We are a conservative, ultra-conservative state. And, you know, as much as I like Beto, the thing about Beto is he's really coming strong on the stage for the United States. And so, so we're probably not done. If he loses to Cruz, which is still a good chance, I'm going to say when he loses, and I do not want him to lose, but when he loses, he can step up and be a vice presidential, you know, candidate, or even a, you know, a la Obama, a young, up and coming.
Here's my response to that. For a while, I've been not on the Beto train, but I've been skeptical. I've been skeptical because I don't want to, I don't want to get hurt again. You know, I don't want to put my heart out there and get heartbroken by another loss. But Beto has been pushing further to the left, and I think he's been energized by a lot of left-wing candidates like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, like these very progressive Dems who are running and winning, and he's making that known, and he's not afraid to be up close and progressive now. I didn't see that over the summer. I did not see that over the summer. I'm seeing it now. He's being very pro Medicare for all. He's doubling down on cannabis legalization. I think that's super cool. And I think a lot of people my age are going to be inspired by him. And I want him to win. Now, here's my second point. You compared him to Obama. And I think that's a very apt comparison. But I'm worried that if he wins and he pulls an Obama, that that's where my real disappointment will come in. And we'll just get more of the same.
Well, he's not, but you know, he's not Obama.
Yeah.
And that's another thing is, you know, not to throw out Q Anon, but I just did, I'm trying to get my brother on this podcast a little bit. And he said, okay, we've got to discuss Q Anon. And so,
oh yeah, we got to discuss Q Anon.
And so interesting thing about, you know, Q Anon threw out, who paid for Barack Obama's, JP or JD degree.
Uh-huh. And who was it? Cuba?
Saudis.
The Saudis?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yay. QAnon. Uh-huh.
Well, that happened.
The
it did.
Most
they did.
Reputable. Yeah. Yeah. What scholarship did he win?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Okay.
No, you think I look into this? I don't.
And that's how they get things. You.
Well, let's look into that. All right.
Okay.
But it, it makes sense. I mean, foreign bodies are going to want to give scholarships to bright individuals who they think can be can win elections down the road, and they probably give out hundreds. Who knows?
Uh-huh.
And you should be looking for one.
Oh yeah. Well, why get a ideological extremist from a different country when I can just do that here? I mean, I've got so many plans to turn right wing and get so much money from the Koch brothers.
Yeah.
You know, I've got great grifter ideas. I could be like a nifty, like crafts person who only makes like come and take it coasters and like really shitty, like tank tops.
Make coasters good again.
Make coasters great again.
Yeah.
That could, and like, yeah. And I can promote their market loving ideologies.
All right.
I think that's really easy.
All right. So I want to bring up Trump a little bit.
Okay.
This wave. I'm excited for the first time for the Republicans to lose the Senate since we've started talking about this election way back in last January, and Trump is making that possible. Trump is actually making it great. And I'm excited about the fact that...
What do you mean, making it great?
Making the fact... I just think he's floundering. And I think that that a lot of the people who have supported him are not supporting him because of... You know, I just think that he's... Let's take this op-ed. You know, the op-ed from the New York Times. And
uh-huh.
And an anonymous person wrote in his cabinet,
It wasn't in his cabinet. It was in his administration.
In his administration, okay. And well, you don't know that, or do you?
I mean, it's the New York Times says from his administration. But,
okay.
I mean, it's not Jeff Sessions isn't writing that.
Well, that you know what you don't know that either.
Okay. Should we talk about this op-ed? Is this the transition?
Might as well. I mean. Let's move on to it.
All right. Well, here's who do you think?
There's no way I know. There's no way I could even guess. I do like I do like when fingers were pointed at Pence for a while, but I don't think Pence is in his inner circle. I don't think he could be in the White House when Trump's there. It's going to be somebody I've never heard of.
Yeah.
And maybe somebody who's a little arrogant.
Yeah.
I think that I'm not impressed. I enjoy the dissent, but I'm not impressed that that we have somebody who's saving the world from Trump inside. I'd like to think that his administration is going cattywampus. I think that he lives that way.
Yeah.
But
can you tell me, were you excited when this op-ed came out?
Yeah, I was. When Woodward's book the excerpts that were being released let out, uh-huh. and then the day after that, the op-ed comes out. Yeah, I was excited.
Yep.
And it's nothing I haven't heard before.
Right.
And it's nothing that we didn't see early.
Yeah.
You know, Trump has kind of figured it out and what it takes to have the job, and he's been doing it, but he still wings it off his cuff and just it may be entertaining, but it's horrible.
What in particular did you like about this article? Because I want to hear your opinion, and then I'll tell you what I think.
Well,
about it.
What I liked about it is that it's still two things. Number one, it showed that the administration is crumbling, that it is as chaotic as I thought it was, how it's as big of a mess as it seems to be. And when you have people you trust hiding papers from you so you can't sign them, that is turmoil. That's chaos.
Yeah.
All right. And then,
you know, Trump's like a toddler, like when you play peekaboo with a toddler.
He is a baby.
They can't. He really can't see you. So if you hide the document, he's like, I don't know where it went.
No, out of sight, out of mind. I don't even think he wondered where it went.
What's that? That's in psychology. It's called something. Yeah. Some sort of like reflex.
He just starts thinking of something else.
Yeah.
And so it's golf. Out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah. What's your second point?
And then it's that I don't know. I don't remember. And that's my age there.
Here's my thing, all right? And we can talk about suspects later, or people we think wrote this. Dad, when I read this, I was not excited. I was even more turned on by anger. Anger erupted in me.
You're frightened a little bit?
And not frightened, but here's the thing. Here's the title. I am part of the resistance inside the Trump administration. When we talk about resistance to Trump, according to this person, resistance is hiding those memos that relate to talking to Kim Jong-un. Resistance is spilling coffee on a document, you know?
You're saying it's not much of a resistance?
Well, I mean, I'm just gonna read this. This is the freaking third paragraph. To be clear, ours is not the popular resistance of the left. We want the administration to succeed and think that many of its policies have already made America safer and more prosperous.
Yeah, but somewhere down...
This is the brain rot of conservatism. And you can be... Here's the main crux. This is what they don't like about Trump. They don't like that he is amoral. They don't like that he...
Oh, I know.
Says
I know.
Off the
You're talking
and
about
honestly, the, yeah. I don't give a crap about that, okay?
Immoral, right.
Like, it's ridiculous, the things he says. What scares me is that there's someone in this administration, there's probably lots of people in this administration who really think the conservative mission of deregulation, of jingoism, of racism, of just perpetual laissez-faire capitalism is good for America. And that's scary. And the people who scare me even more are the liberals who buy into this.
Buy into
the resistance narrative. It's not real resistance. That's not true. Uh-oh, did our stream break out? Are we good?
No.
Oh. Well, I'll keep going.
Yeah,
keep the going. The other paragraph, don't get me wrong. There are bright spots that the near ceaseless negative coverage of the administration fails to capture.
All right.
Effective deregulation, historic tax reform, a more robust military, and more.
And so we're still...
This is our nightmare.
Yeah, well, it's the conservative agenda.
But it's going to destroy America.
Read the last two lines, and I think that's what I remember...
Oh, my God. You want me to read the last two lines of this?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ. The last two lines, not the last two paragraphs.
No, yeah, just the last two lines.
But the real difference will be made by everyday citizens rising above politics, reaching across the aisle, and resolving to shed the labels in favor of a single one, Americans. All right.
That's not what I thought it was. There was a line in there about how we're going to get rid of them one way or the other. And I thought that
they make that line. Let me find it.
It's all right. It's not. It's just the so it's disturbing to me. It's entertaining because we're now again on a witch hunt, and he can't stand this, so he's focusing on this for a while. I do worry about his intellect. I do worry about how intelligent the man is, and how
He's never read a book in his life.
And so I think
our like Miss Scarlet with a blanket over her is more intelligent than Donald Trump.
Okay, all right, let's get off this one. What do we got? What else we have?
I don't know if I'm off of it yet. Who's our suspects? You think it's a cabinet
member? I don't know enough about even who to guess, because I think it's a lower level person. The only thing I do think is that the New York Times thinks it's someone big enough to write an article about, you know, to allow this to happen. Yeah. I also think there's more synergy in this Woodward thing, and maybe this guy is making money off the book because it's, to me, there's too much of a coincidence.
Yeah.
And I'm also old enough not to believe in coincidences. I think that it's orchestrated.
Here's my suspect. Barron Trump.
I think he's 10 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's the one trying to bring him down. Yeah. Barron, all he wants to do is play Fortnite, be a regular kid, and he can't. He has to, you know, wear suits, little sailor outfits, and go to galas, and you know, he wants to be free.
All right.
It's Barron.
I don't think so. But anyway.
All right.
All right. So what else we have, Max? We're going to...
Well, I want to talk about healthcare a little bit more. And so, listeners, you can tell I'm trying to be more organized in our podcast. I have a couple of articles that I've been pulling from. And I hope that you enjoy that. The next article I'm pulling from, which inspired me to talk about healthcare, is this NPR piece on a teacher in Texas, in Austin, who had a heart attack and was rushed to the hospital, survived it, and then got slapped with a $100,000 hospital bill.
And
have you heard about that, Dad?
I did hear that. In that article, they quoted a whole bunch of people who basically went to the hospital and had $30,000 here. I mean, for little things.
Also,
we have some good news on that front. Is that these hospitals there are hospitals getting together? I think this was the same article, getting together to create a pharmaceutical company. They're going to develop generic drugs to distribute amongst themselves and in anybody in the network. And it's a nonprofit kind of thing. I think it's a, you know, you're going to get your, it's very socialistic and a capitalistic with a capitalist wrapper.
Okay, we're gonna table that, and I want you to hold on to it. Here's my follow up to this article, though. After the publication of this report, the man got his hospital bill decreased to $782.
Because did he have insurance?
He did. And he was promised, he had Aetna, which if you work for Aetna, count your days, 'cause your boy's coming after you. But, yeah, for real. I hate Aetna. All right. I hate all insurance companies. But anyway, so this guy, he had Aetna, and the hospital that he was going to they said that they would take that insurance, and apparently they didn't. So he was covered. He had insurance, but it was out of network, as we say. But the fact that this was cut so low to $782, that's the real cost of the care right there. You know?
No, it's not.
Absolutely.
No.
Everything else is built off of this parasitic profit motive of
the healthcare
industry.
And you gotta throw in what the news had a lot of negative press for these people.
Absolutely.
And that's what the cost was. It was the cost to to eliminate that negative press.
Yeah, but there's no reason why that shouldn't be the cost for every heart attack victim or survivor. So here's my thing. What's that?
I agree with you there.
Absolutely. So tell me what you think about single payer, Dad. We briefly talked about this 2 weeks ago.
Well,
I want to revisit it again.
I think I think we talked about my belief that I believe too much in corruption, and I don't know if it'll work because people get motivated for different reasons, but I think it's got to be better than what we have now. And you're saying that if the government took over mm-hmm. as a single payer, that mm-hmm. we worked through them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that. I think if we eliminate it, and this is, I do like the candidate from New York. If we've paid for
Cynthia Nixon for governor?
No, Ocasio or
Alexandria Ocasio Cortez.
Yes, Alexandria. Yes. Yeah,
AOC.
AOC.
Gang.
And we paid for our wars. We paid for bailouts. Let's pay for health care.
All right.
And let's pay for health care and education.
You heard it here, folks.
And I think if I'd like to give it a shot, that's what I think of single payer.
Oh.
I like it.
Well, I'm glad I could convince you of that last episode.
Well, last time I said that I'm still worried about the government being ripe with.
Yeah, but there's no incentive to do that. There's no incentive to be corrupt in that regard. If you eliminate the profit motive, there's no. Who cares, you know?
Yeah, I think people get motivated by profit, and they get motivated, and people are going to be paid well. You know, don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. they'll be paid well, but I think that it's like the Army issued new handguns today, right?
Or this week. I didn't see that.
And they're a new line of handguns which are lighter and better and faster and great looking and very popular amongst the troops who are getting them. How many of those do you think are already being sold on the black market?
Right.
How many? You just can't make a million of something or a billion of something and not expect 30,000 to be shaven off at a time to go somewhere else. And I think that when medications come in and it's government paid, I think people will help themselves and move. I just don't like it.
Wait. I think that's a very weird comparison.
Guns, it's the same thing. Units. Meds. It can be widgets.
Why?
It doesn't matter what they are.
If we lived in single payer, there would be nurses pocketing pacemakers and selling them on the black market?
Well, I think that... I think
why?
Because I think people are motivated by greed. And I think that it's a... It may not be nurses, and I don't want to single out nurses. I think it could be anybody. But the point is, it doesn't have to be 50,000 people. It only needs to be one.
I don't think that's realistic. I don't think that's going to happen in this context. And
I'm willing to give it a shot. I would like to. And there's I believe there's corruption everywhere, and that the amount of corruption can waver. So that's good.
You know, I think this is the real big difference between our generations. And I think you're in boomer mentality tends to be of the mindset that the government is corrupt.
Okay.
And that business is not.
Oh, no.
Well, I'm not saying you might not think that.
I
think
see
that
your
the
point.
Majority of boomers do.
I see your point.
And to the millennials, I think it's less so, except for the case of Donald Trump. I think millennials are more likely to trust the government and trust like social programs and be more wary of big business.
I think that Texas is a part of that too, is that we've got the ultra right wing has sold us that the government is out to get us. They're here to take our guns and to force expensive education upon us, force single payer health care where we're going to have to pay. I think Texas has done a lot of that to us.
Yeah.
Anyway, Max.
Oh, what's our time? What's our time?
I have no idea.
What's our time at, Alex?
You have any idea? It doesn't matter. But I'm tired and
Oh, you're tired? We're ending it this early?
Well, I don't know what it is.
All right. Well.
Do I have one more topic?
It's at least, it's 41 minutes.
Wow, this has been 41 minutes?
Yeah.
All right.
Last topic. Well, I thought you had one more.
Nope, that's the topic. But if you want to tap out, Dad, I do want to tell our listeners just one thing that has crossed my path. My mom handed me a old spiral that says The Bug Story, and it's by Max and Mom. And I wrote this when I was... Mom, how old was I when I wrote this?
I was probably 4, maybe.
I was probably 4. And you can already see the types of anti-capitalist mindset going into a very young toddler, a very young Max. So I want to read you chapter 1. Oh, I want to read you all the chapters. Here's The Bug Story. Chapter 1, Bees and Wasps. One day in Bee Town, a wasp came. The bee said, "You stink," and they started fighting. And I have two drawings of a bee and a wasp. Chapter 2, Ladybugs and Centipedes. One day in Ladybug Town, it was nice and quiet, but then a giant centipede came. The ladybugs then had a big fight. Who do you think would win? And I have a ladybug and a centipede drawn. Now, this is really where my Marxist-Leninist mindset comes. Chapter 3. One day in Butterfly Land, a moth came. The moth said, "I am hungry. Let's eat." The butterfly said, "You're right." And so they had a big feast. Look at that. That's so... chapter 4 is called Crabs, which I don't know why chapter 4 is called Crabs. Crabs are not bugs. I was an idiot. My name is Crab. I live in the ocean. But do you know why I'm called Crab? Because I eat slab. One day I lost my underpants, and then I gave my kids a bottle, and then one got a splinter in his foot. They didn't figure it out. That's more like existentialist, I think. Chapter 5 is called Scorpions. Scorpions sting not for fun, but because they protect themselves. Scorpions are arachnids, but they sting people really bad. You can get a splinter from their stinger, so never get close to a scorpion. Sometimes they eat cactuses. Other times they eat bugs. Where do they get the water? From cactus or the blood of a bug? That's really amazing. I'm not going to read all of it, actually. I do want to end with chapter 8. And this is hilarious. Chapter 8, All the Bugs with Their Meeting. One bug said, "Let's have a meeting." The other bug said, "Yes." And so they've been talking and talking and talking. They were talking about their dumb boss. They were reading books. Then one bug said, "I'm a bug and my name is Walking Stick." The giant water bug was swimming. They were having a big feast. The end. I just love the,
thanks, Max.
About their dumb boss.
Thanks for that.
4 years old, already spitting truth and mad knowledge.
All right, Max, that's it for me.
All right, that's it for me. Thank you, listeners. Thank you to all of our subscribers. Shout outs to Brian and Brittany for being great friends.
And keeping that anti-capitalistic theme, remember, if you come up to a business and it's a father-son's business, remember to always ask for the father.
There we go. Burning, burning.